turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. This is one of those that I have said for a number of years I think is vitally important, and certainly when it comes to understanding one of the fundamental issues, especially nowadays, that affects all of society, but in particular with marriage. It's right in here. And so we're going to go slow. Most of you have heard it, but if you haven't, it's vital to understand. Even if you have, it never hurts to take a look and read it again, because there's an old Hebrew saying I like. It's actually a rabbinic Jewish saying, but it goes like this. Man is not wise in Torah till 40 times through. So most of us haven't read it that many times yet. And I do find that I get a little something out of it additional every year. Anyway, it goes like this. This is Numbers chapter 30, verse 2. And Moshe spoke, and it says, V'yedber Moshe al the multiple heads of the matot. So there's the unique word. Matot is the, therefore, name of the portion. Anyway, of the tribes of the B'nai Israel, saying, this is the thing which Yahuwah has commanded. And here we go. This is about vows. When a man vows a vow unto Yahuwah, or swears an oath to bind his soul with a bond, he shall not break his word. He shall do everything, all, and according to all, that proceeds out of his mouth. So let me just pause there. For men, it's real simple. You say something, you should do it. Especially if you vow a vow unto Yahuwah, or swear an oath to bind your soul with a bond, you shall not break your word. And you've heard the old saying, I usually repeat it when we go through this, a man's word is his bond. And I'd suggest that society would be a hell of a lot better off if that was actually true. When a woman, on the other hand, vows a vow unto Yahuwah and binds herself by a bond, well, we have multiple cases here at this point. We're going to see two of them. First one, we're going to actually see more than two, but the first two primary ones, let's put it that way. First one, when she's in her father's house in her youth. So she's young, she has not yet been married. And her father hears her vow, or her bond, wherewith she has bound her soul, and her father holds his peace at her, in other words, he doesn't correct it, then all her vows shall stand, and every bond wherewith she has bound her soul shall stand. But on the other hand, it says, if her father disallows her in the day that he hears it. So here's one of the conditions. We're going to see this repeated, vitally important to understand, in the day that he hears it. Now, I read that. Your mileage may vary, but when it comes to understanding Scripture, I think we better try to understand it the way he does. That means until sundown. So before the sun goes down, don't let the sun go down on a bad vow. If he disallows her on that day, none of her vows or the bonds wherewith she has bound her soul shall stand. And Yahuwah will forgive her because her father disallowed her. So this is the reason I refer to this as covering. The father basically is saying, I'm going to take care of my daughter, and if she says something that she should not have said, and I'm aware of it, I'm going to cast it down. I better do it on the day that I hear it. And Yah will forgive her. On the other hand, if she's older, if she is married to a husband, while her vows are upon her, or the clear utterance of her lips, wherewith she has bound her soul, and this time it's her husband that hears it. So we have, essentially, a father in her youth, husband, her covering when she's older and has a husband. When her husband hears it, whatsoever day it is that he hears it, and if he holds his peace at her, then her vow shall stand, and her bonds wherewith she has bound her soul shall stand. So likewise, just as with the father, the covering, her husband in this case, says, I'm going to cast that down. If he does not, on the day that he hears it, then she's stuck with the vows. But if her husband does disallow her on the day that he hears it, then he shall make void her vow which is upon her, and the clear utterance of her lips, wherewith she has bound her soul, and Yahuwah will forgive her. So again, this is the word covering doesn't actually appear in any English versions that I'm aware of Scripture, but I think the concept is, and it's pretty well made very clear here. So the husband or the father is the covering for a young woman or later a wife, and he, the covering, has the authority to cast down the vows or to let them stand. He has to do it on the day that he hears them. And notice, it's not the day that she says it. It's the day that he finds out about it and hears them. And I think that's a vital distinction to understand. But, it says, now wait a minute, yep, that does not describe all possible variations of women, right? Not counting the BS that they're being taught in the public cesspools. Anyway, but the vow of a widow, someone who has a husband that's passed on, or of her that has been put away and given a get, in other words, a gerasha, a divorcee is one rendering, well, everything that she has said that has bound her soul, that shall stand against her. If a woman vows in her husband's house or bound her soul by a bond with an oath, and her husband hears it, and he holds his peace at her, then, and he did not disallow her, in other words, then all her vows shall stand, and every bond wherewith she has bound her soul shall stand. So this is a repetition, just to make it very clear what we're saying here. The husband has authority. If he holds his peace, doesn't say anything, her vows stand. If he does not, well, then what we're going to see in verse 13, again, a repetition. But if her husband makes them null and void, and right there you get the idea, in the day that he hears them, in the day that he hears them. So, quick aside here. When it comes to understanding this, I have taken the position for a long time. Again, this is markology, your mileage may vary, but it makes sense to me to say, look, if it's vitally important that I cast down a vow, I'm going to do it right away. Why wait, right, until, 10 minutes after sundown, you go, oh, no, I should have said something. Well, if that's the case, say it right then and make it clear. Not only don't let the sun go down on a bad vow, don't let your mind wander and don't forget about it, because if it's important to cast it down, it's important to do it now. If it's the kind of thing you got to pray about for a couple hours, fine, but at least make sure you get it before you let your mind move on from it. So, again, if her husband hears it, holds her peace, then it stands. But if her husband makes them null and void in the day that he hears them, then whatsoever has proceeded out of her lips, whether it were her vows or the bond of her soul, it shall not stand. Her husband has made them void, and Yahuwah will forgive her. Every vow, every binding oath to afflict the soul, her husband may let it stand, or her husband may make it void. Now, let me pause here. And I'll tell you, I'll suggest, and again, hopefully this isn't new to folks, but this is part of the reason why I think it's important, and I'll give you some examples that over the years I have found important. I can look around the room here and see that my wife will respond, yep, I heard this many, many times, I'm going to cast that vow down. There are a lot of things sometimes we'll say that might be a vow, right? Oh, blankety, blankety, blanket, as long as I live, I'll never do such and such again. Well, sometimes we say things we should not say. And when that's the case, I would say this is the obligation of the husband at that point to cast it down. There are some other things. And to my mind, one of the most dramatic that I've seen over the years a number of times is a young woman in her father's house does something. Let's just say she actually, you can think of 100 ways this could happen without going into all the details, uses a Ouija board, gets involved in some occult practices, literally does something that allows a demonic spirit to attach itself to her, cause her grief, whatever the case may be. And it's been going on. And sometimes, folks, I've literally seen these situations where the woman might have forgotten. She might not even know why it is that she's got a problem in some area. And then one day, through prayer, a lot of times if a husband is praying with his wife and you say, well, why do we have this problem here? And it turns out there is a demonic thing that has been going on for maybe decades, something that happened in her youth. I'll give you the pad example. This isn't necessarily the best one, but the one I've talked about. A little girl comes home from school, says, Billy said something nasty to me, Daddy. As long as I live, I'll never love a boy. I'll never get married. I'll never let a man do anything to me, blah-de-blah. Well, the father basically should say, no, honey, I'm going to cast that vow down. That is not true. Someday you're going to find a wonderful man. He's going to cover you. He's going to love you. You're going to have children. It's going to be a wonderful thing. You're going to find blessing in that. And he should do that. But suppose he doesn't. And years later, without even knowing it, sometimes the young woman at this point, or an older woman, realizes, hey, there's a reason why I don't trust men. I've got this problem, and prayerfully, it's been revealed to me what it is. Well, on the day that her husband hears it, that is when the loving husband says, okay, I'm going to cast that vow down. Sweetheart, you're going to be delivered of that. I'm going to cast that down. And that's the end of it. And I will suggest, from personal experience and from understanding of Scripture and a whole bunch of reasons, that is a great blessing and it is a tool that Yah has given us that we need to understand and to use. Okay, so if her husband holds her peace, then his peace, all of her vows stand. But, and here we go, this is key, and I think it's vital to understand as well, and this is part of the reason why I think the word covering is apropos. But if he does make them null and void after he has heard them, then guess what? He shall bear, lift is another rendering for this, but bear is probably a more blunt understanding. He shall bear her Torahlessness. He shall bear her iniquity. He shall bear the guilt for it. Wow. Now, one of the reasons I think this is important is because when we talk about marriage and the breaking of a complete vow of, the kind of a set of vows that marriage is, that's true. We see a lot of teachings, and I won't go through them now, but we've talked about them before, why it is that the husband bears the guilt in terms of a marriage. It's really, I think, the reason why it is that Adam bears the guilt, even though he wasn't the first to sin, if you will, for what happened in the garden in Genesis chapter 3. But understand this, if the husband makes them null and void, after he hears them, then he shall bear her guilt. Well, I guess I say there's one other interesting thing that's really good, and certainly this fits in so many ways too. It's a good thing we have a kinsman redeemer who is able to, in turn, bear our guilt, isn't it? All right, the last verse in the chapter says, these are the statutes, and that means hukim, the Hebrew word there, which Yahuwah commanded Moshe between a man and his wife, or between a father and his daughter, being in her youth in her father's house. So, vitally important stuff. As always, if there's questions, I'll even get my email address at this point, because sometimes we get emails maybe months later after these things go up online. It's Mark, M-A-R-K, at marknywatt.com. M-A-R-K, at marknywatt.com. And, of course, comments, questions, emails like that, things are always welcome. All right, let's talk about some of the other elements of the Parsha here. Chapter 31 says, and Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, avenge, the B'nai Israel of the Midianites. Afterward, you will be gathered unto your people. So this is Moshe's final day, essentially. So he spoke unto the people, saying, arm yourselves, you men from among you, for the war, that they may go out against Midian to execute the vengeance of Yahuwah against Midian. Now why? What's happening here? Remember, the women of Midian came and seduced the men, got them basically to go after fake gods, Baal of Peor. Turns out we're going to find out that in this section here, we know who it was that made it clear to them that was a really good idea, how to get around the fact that he has blessed them, and that fellow would be Balaam. So, out of every tribe of 1,000, throughout all the tribes of Israel, you shall send to war. So, out of every tribe, you're going to send 1,000 men. So, it's going to be 12,000 total to go to war. So, they were delivered out of the thousands of Israel, 1,000 of every tribe, 12,000 armed for war. Moshe sent them, 1,000 of every tribe, to the war. Them, along with Pinchas, the son of Eleazar the priest, to the war, with the holy vessels and the trumpets for the alarm in his hand. And they warred against Midian, as Yahuwah commanded Moshe, and they slew every male. They slew the kings of Midian with the rest of their slain. Here come the names, Evi, and Rechem, and Zur, and Hur, and Reba, the five kings of Midian. Oh, it says this too, Bilaam, son of Beor, they also slew Becherev. Not with the mouth of the sword in his case. He doesn't deserve that. He gets the edge of the sword. Just slew him with the sword. And again, that is kind of an exception for, the kinds of things that generally ought to happen, and I think it's fitting in this case. The children of Israel, it says, took captive the women of Midian, and their little ones, all their cattle, all their flocks, and all of their goods. They took them for a prey, a war prize, booty. Several terms you'll see in art for warfare and things that have been described throughout history. Yes, we may say, that's a horrible custom, but folks, this goes back thousands of years, and there's an interesting aspect to it that we're going to see here. In all their cities, all the places where they dwelt, and all their encampments, these things they burned with fire. They took the spoil, the booty, the prize, all the prey, both of man and of beast, and they brought the captives and the prey and the spoil, and they were everything that they had captured, unto Moshe and unto Eleazar the Kohen, and under the congregation of the B'nai Israel, Kol Edot, and the camp there at the plains of Moab, which are by the river Jordan at Jericho. And then, guess what? Moshe and Eleazar the priest and all the princes of the congregation went forth to meet them outside the camp, and Moshe was some kind of PO'd. Huh? What's going on? Why? Moshe, it says, was wroth with the officers of the host, the captains of thousands and the captains of hundreds. So in other words, the higher ranking leadership he had a problem with, who came from the service of the war. We're going to see that's key. Leaders of 50s and of 10s and some of the lower ranking, they're not named here, but it's the captains of hundreds and of thousands. So Moshe said to them, "Have you saved all the women alive? Behold," he says, "listen carefully. These were the women who caused the B'nai Israel through the counsel of Bilaam." So if we didn't know it before, now we do. This was Bilaam saying, "I can't curse them, but I'll tell you how to have it happen. We'll get them to curse themselves." Okay? Yeah, that's my take on it, but ultimately Scripture is real clear. It was Bilaam that gave them the advice to do this, to revolt, so as to break faith with Yahuwah in the matter of Peor, and so the plague came among the congregation of Yahuwah. So what does Moshe say? "Now therefore, kill every male among the little ones." Every male, even among the young ones. Sounds like California, doesn't it? Although in this case, it's righteous because it's the creator of the universe that is commanding this, and we know why. "Kill every woman that has known man by lying with him." So all the women that are not virgins. "All the women children that have not known men by lying with them, those you may keep alive, keep them alive for yourselves. And encamp outside the camp for 7 days. Whoever's killed anyone," right? Remember, the unclean because of death do not come into the camp. "Whoever's touched any slain body," whatever, dead person, "purify yourselves as commanded on the third day and on the seventh day, you and your captives. And as to every garment, everything that's made out of skin," animal skins in other words, "all works made out of goat hair and all things made of wood, these you shall purify." So Eleazar the Kohen said to the men of war that went to the battle, "This is the statute," and it's a mitzvot. No, in this case it's a huchat, "which Yahuwah has commanded Moshe." How this is done, having to do with death. "How be it, though, the gold, the silver, the brass, the iron, the tin, and the lead, everything that can handle going through the fire," that's what you're going to do. You're going to make them go through the fire, and that will clean it. "Nevertheless, it shall be purified with the water of sprinkling." So even after that, sprinkle the water, the ashes of the red heifer is what it sounds like this is, on those things. "And everything that can handle going through the fire, like articles of clothing or wood or whatever, those things that cannot abide the fire, you shall make go through the water." So they get washed regardless. "And you shall wash your clothes on the seventh day, and then you shall be clean. Afterwards, you can come back into the camp." So Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, "Take the sum," and this is again the rosh, the head count, "of all of the prey that was taken, both of man and of beast." Now, as you might suspect, here in this book that's been given the name Numbers, we're going to get some numbers coming up. "This is you and Eleazar the priest and the heads of the houses of the fathers of the Ha'edah, the congregation. Now, divide the prey," he says, "into two parts, between the men skilled in war that went out to battle and all the congregation." So it works like this with prize. And what he is saying is, those men that went out and actually did the dirty deeds, fought the fight, worked hard, they are going to get half of the prize, the booty, the war prey that was taken. As for the rest of the congregation, they're going to get the other half. And we're going to see another addition here in a second. "Divide the prey into two parts." Okay, first for the men that went into the battle, second the congregation. "And levy a tribute unto Yahuwah of the men that went out to battle. One soul out of 500, so one life, one nefesh out of 500, both of the persons and of the beeves, or the cattle, and of the asses, and of the flocks. And take it of their half, and give that to Eleazar the Kohen as a portion set apart for Yahuwah." So one out of 500 is going to go to Yahuwah, and that would be through Eleazar in this case. "And of the B'nai Israel's, their half, you shall take one drawn out of every 50. So a slightly larger part. Actually, it's 10 times larger if you think about it. "Of the persons, of the beeves, of the asses, the flax, all the cattle, give those unto the Levites that keep the charge of the tabernacle of Yahuwah." So a larger tribute, the one out of 50, will go to Yahuwah, and that means in turn to all of the Levites. So Moshe and Eleazar the Kohen did as Yahuwah commanded Moshe. Now the prey, over and above the booty which the men of war took, was, here comes some numbers, 675,000 sheep, and 72,000 or 72,000 beeves, and 61,000 asses, so lots of animals, 32,000 persons in all, of the women that had not known man by lying with them. So I've got 32,000 virgin women. That half, which was the portion of them that went out to war, was in number 330,7500. Okay, you got to read the number. So 337,500 sheep. Yehu's tribute out of those sheep was 675, 315. The beeves, there were 36,000 of those, of which Yehoah's tribute was 72, 312. And the asses, there were 30,500, of which the tribute for Yehoah was 61. The persons, there were 16,000, and the tribute to Yehoah of them, 32. Moshe then gave the tribute, which was set apart for Yehoah, unto Eleazar the priest, as Yehoah commanded Moshe. And of the B'nai Israel's half, which Moses divided off from the men that went to war, now the congregation's half was 337,500 sheep, 36,000 beeves, 30,500 asses, 16,000 persons. So, of the B'nai Israel's half, Moshe took one, drawn out of every 50, a man and a beast, gave them unto the Levites to keep those who keep the charge of the tabernacle of Yehoah, again, as Yehoah commanded Moshe. And the officers that were over the thousands of the host, the captains of thousands, and the captains of hundreds, came near unto Moshe. And remember, these were the ones he was angry with. They said unto Moshe, your servants have taken the sum of the men of war that are under our charge, and there is not one, there lacks not one man of us. So we didn't lose anybody. We brought the offering of Yehoah, what every man has gotten, of jewels of gold, armlets, bracelets, signet rings, earrings, girdles, to make atonement for our souls before Yehoah. So we brought it all. Moshe and Eleazar the priest took the gold of them, all the wrought jewels along with it, and all the gold of the gift that they set apart for Yehoah of the captains of thousands and of the captains of hundreds was 16,750 shekels. For the men of war had taken booty, every man for himself. And Moshe and Eleazar the priest took the gold of the captains of hundreds and of thousands and brought it into the tent of meeting for a memorial for the B'nai Israel before Yehoah. So those were the ones that originally he held responsible. They took that and they made it a memorial offering for the B'nai Israel before Yehoah. Now, we're going to hear one other thing. This is the final chapter, and this is one of those important elements that's going to play into how the land is going to be divided, and we're going to see a near misunderstanding here and how it's worked out. The children of Reuben and the children of Gad, they had lots of cattle. And when they saw the land of Yazer, the land of Gilead, behold, they looked at it and said, man, this is a great place for cattle. Lots of grasslands here. Cattle are going to love it. So the children of Gad and the children of Reuben came, and they spoke unto Moshe and to Eleazar the Cohen, and under the princes of the congregation Ha'edah, and they said, Atarot, Dibon, Yazer, Nimrah, Heshbon, Eleah, Elealeh, Sebam, Nebo, and Baon, all this land which Yehuah smote before the congregation of Israel, it's a great place for cattle. And your servants, well, you know, we have cattle. So they said, look, if we have found favor in your sight, let this land be what we pick. Let this land be unto your servants, given for a possession. So don't bring us over the Jordan River. Now, Moshe is starting to get a little bit peeved. He says to the children of Israel, in this case of Gad and of Reuben, shall your brothers go out to war while you guys sit here on your, you know, blessed assurance, while you sit here? Why, therefore, will you turn away the heart of the children of Israel from going over into the land which Yehu has given them? He is probably still thinking back to the fact that, you know, we had some folks that that issued a bad report. A lot of folks suffered for that. That's what your fathers did, he says, when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. They went up to the Valley of Eshkol, and he's no doubt thinking about this story and starting to get a little hot under the collar. They saw the land. They turned away the heart of the B'nai Israel, that they should not go into the land which Yehu has given them. Is that what's happening here? Yehu's anger was kindled in that day, and he swore, says Moshe. And here's what he said. Surely none of the men that came up out of Egypt, anybody above the age of 20, shall see this land which I swore unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob, because you've not wholly followed me. Except for Caleb, son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and Joshua, son of Nun, because they have wholly followed Yahuwah. So Yahuwah's anger was kindled against Israel. He made them wander to and fro in the wilderness for 40 years, till that whole generation, all of them that had done evil in the sight of Yahuwah, was consumed, right? Their carcasses fell, they're all dead out here in the wilderness. And behold, he says, here you are, you have risen up in your father's stead, a brood of sinful men, to augment yet the fierce anger of Yahuwah towards Israel. Because if you turn away from him, he will yet again leave them in the wilderness, and so you will destroy all of this people. Moshe is getting ready to just have in it, right? And they came near to him, and they said, wait just a second here. Okay, you can almost hear the conciliatory tone. They said, we will build sheepfolds here for our cattle and cities for our little ones, but, hey, don't get us wrong, we ourselves will be ready, armed, to go out before the B'nai Israel until we have brought them unto their place. And our little ones shall dwell in the fortified cities because of the inhabitants of the land. So we will do our part. We'd like to build the sheepfolds and places for the cattle, leave the little ones here, but we will not, in fact, shirk our duty. We will not, it says, return unto our houses until the B'nai Israel have inherited every man his inheritance. We'll hang in there till the end. We will not inherit with them, if you listen to us, in other words, if you grant our plea here, we will not inherit with them on the other side of the Jordan and forward, because our inheritance is fallen to us on this side of the Jordan to the east. So Moshe is thinking about it. Okay. All right. If, in fact, he says, you'll do this thing, if you'll arm yourselves to go out before Yahuwah to war, and every armed man of you will pass over the Jordan before Yahuwah, until he has driven out his enemies from before him, and the land is subdued before Yahuwah, and then you return afterwards, okay, fine, then you shall be clear before Yahuwah and before Israel, and this land, just as you want, shall be a possession unto you before Yahuwah. But look, he says, if you will not do so, behold, you have sinned against Yahuwah, and you know your sin will find you, and you know what it is that will find you. So, go ahead, he says, build your cities for your little ones, sheepfolds for your sheep, and listen to this. Does this sound familiar? No wonder we started with chapter 30, right? You will what? You will do everything that proceeds out of your mouth. So we have the example, chapter 30, of this concept. A man's word is his bond. Men, if you say something, you will do it. And what he's telling these men here of Gad and of Reuben, you will do it. You better. And the children of Gad and the children of Reuben spoke to Moshe, and they said, your servants will do as my Lord commands. Our little ones, our wives, our flocks, all our cattle, they will be there in the cities of Gilead. But your servants, just as we said, will pass over every man that's armed for war before Yahuwah to battle, as my Lord says. So Moshe gave charge concerning him to Eleazar the priest and to Joshua, the son of Nun, and the heads of the fathers' houses of the tribes of the B'nai Israel. And Moshe said to him, look, if the children of Gad and the children of Reuben will pass with you over the Jordan, and notice how he's repeating this. The indication here, I think, is important, and it's fairly clear. We're going to make very, very sure, going to repeat it. We all are on the same page. Let's make very clear, because we're repeating it. I'm telling you, they've said it, they've told me, the captains of these large groups have heard it. Everybody knows what we're agreeing to here. The children of Gad and the children of Reuben will pass with you over the Jordan, every man armed for battle, before Yahuwah, and the land shall be subdued before you. Then, after all of that, then you shall give them the land of Gilead for a possession. But if they will not pass over with you armed, they shall have possessions among you in the land of Canaan. So this too is interesting. He is not saying if they decide not to do this, they're not going to get anything. He says they'll have possessions over there. Children of Gad and the children of Reuben answered, and they said, as Yahuwah has said unto your servants, so will we do. And they repeat it again, no doubt. We will pass over armed before Yahuwah into the land of Canaan, and the possession of our inheritance shall remain with us beyond the Jordan. In other words, when we're over there, it's going to be on this side. Moshe gave unto them, even unto the children of Gad, and to the children of Reuben. Now here is an additional note that we don't see up until this point. And it says, unto the half-tribe of Manasseh, the son of Joseph. So we have one of the two sons of Joseph, Manasseh, and of that tribe, half of them are going to go ahead and take part of this deal. And he gives them the kingdom of Sihon, king of the Amorites, and the kingdom of Og, king of Bashan, those two that have been deposed and disposed of, the land, according to the cities thereof, with their borders, even the cities of the land round about. And the children of Gad, it says, built, now we're going to get some names of some cities, they built Dibon, and Ataroth, and Aror, and Atroth, Shofan, and Yazer, and Yagbaha, and Bet Nimrah, and Bet Haran, fortified cities, along with sheepfolds. And the children of Reuben built Heshbon, and Elealeh, and Kiriat Atim. Kiriat Haim, there we go. And Nebo, and Baal Meon, their names have been changed. And Sibmah, they gave their names unto the cities which they built. And we're almost finished with the portion here. We're going to get some more names of cities and some indications of some of the chiefs that put them together. The children of Machir, son of Manasseh, they went to Gilead. They took it, and they dispossessed the Amorites that were therein. Moshe gave Gilead then unto Machir, the son of Manasseh, and he dwelt there. As for Yair, the son of Manasseh, he went and took the villages thereof, and he called them Havot Yair. And Noba, he went and took Kenath and the villages of that, and he called it after his own name. He called it Noba. So with that, the Torah portion ends. And again, what we've seen is an understanding of vows and how we are to do, men especially, all of those things that proceed out of their mouths. And the Torah portion finishes with an example of precisely what we're talking about.